that folks will take away from this film of yours?
Well, I've been writing and doing films for 40 years now, and of course the hope is always that it alerts people to the current dangers, the current threats, not just a piece of history. It's very interesting history, it's horrifying history, but it's also the lessons for today and the warnings for today, which includes possible use of nuclear weapons again today. We have AI, which is now entering our system, our nuclear systems, which is very scary. And we have that, in my view, the reason for even returning to Hiroshima and Nagasaki is, in my view, there is not a real taboo on using nuclear weapons, because so many historians, so many in the media continue to support the use of the atomic bomb against Hiroshima and even Nagasaki.
And now Trump wants to put a nuclear plant on the moon.
Yeah,
in
right,
the next
nuclear
few
reactor
years.
On the moon. So to me, there's certainly no nuclear taboo as far as I can see, and that makes it scary for possible use again, and that's the reason to keep returning to, may seem like history, but it's very, very, very timely today.
Greg Mitchell, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Director of the new film, now streaming on PBS.org, The Atomic Bowl, Football at Ground Zero and Nuclear Peril Today. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition, presenting their Dance for a Cause event in support of immigrant justice. The event is on Sunday, August 10th, from 4 to 10 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, and will feature a lineup of four bands and a DJ. Tickets and info at pircoregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland State University is reorganizing their administrative structure, but reportedly not to appease Trump's anti-DEI guidelines.
The Trump administration sends National Guard troops to immigration detention centers in 20 states.
And in the mega fire in the Grand Canyon continues to grow.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 6th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Cheryl Denise. Today in the Portland City Council's consent agenda, PCEF committee recommends two new appointees to the Portland Clean Energy Fund Committee and recommends the reappointment of two members for their second term. Portland Clean Energy Fund invests in community-led projects to reduce carbon emissions, create economic opportunity, and help make Portland more resilient as the climate changes. The new appointees are Anna Allen, Regional Government Affairs Director at the Columbia River Inter-Tribal Fish Commission and member of the Shoshone-Bannock Tribe, and Andrew Lightsey Walker, Senior Transportation Planner with Oregon Metro and community activist. The returning appointees are Robin Wang, Executive Director of a nonprofit community development financial institution, also currently working with Oregon DEQ to launch a community climate investment fund, and Megan Hurst, Senior Associate, in climate equity planning at Cascadia Consulting and former PSU professor. The council confirmed the appointees with 12 ayes votes after some discussion with the PCEF board president, Sam Barrasso. After investigation from Councilor Canal, Barrasso admitted that due to bureaucratic slowdowns, most notably the previous administration's, quote, broader overhaul of its approach to advisory body confirmations, and then the change in government body structure, that the two reappointed committee members have been serving but essentially in limbo for almost 2 years. Barrasso confirmed that none of the appointees have blaring conflict of interest with the funds dispersed by PCEF and clarified that in a new change, PCEF committee members appointed are there to advise on the climate investment plan, not funding decisions. Barrasso confirmed that if he felt that the new appointees would be up to the public scrutiny they may face on the board of PCEF, especially since, as Canal pointed out, PCEF may have to, quote, adjust the level to which it supports underprivileged, historically disenfranchised communities, end quote. This would be because of Mayor Wilson's decision to comply with Trump's DEI mandates in order to maintain federal funds. PCEF committee appointees are already in process to take on their roles.
Portland State University says it's not removing diversity, equity, and inclusion language to appease the Trump administration. However, PSU President Ann Cudd says the university is taking steps in early 2026 to reorganize the administrative structure to better serve students. University administrators say changes to its student services program are not a result of the Trump administration's position on DEI. Cudd says that a student support services office called Global Diversity and Inclusion will move under the Office of Academic Affairs, with the Office of Equity and Compliance transitioning to the newly created Office of Equity, Compliance, and Internal Audit. PSU spokesperson Katie Swordfisk said some staff positions will be eliminated and some new ones will be created. Swordfisk went on to say the changes at Portland State have, quote, nothing to do with the federal administration, end quote. The decision is based on recommendations to the PSU administration by the Huron Consulting Group. PSU hired Huron in 2022 to conduct a comprehensive review of support services and operations. Swordfisk says the changes have been carefully considered and refined over time through community conversations about administrative structure and with an eye toward streamlining pathways and services for student success.
The Vice President of Global Diversity and Inclusion, Amé Lambert, said in an email sent last week to the PSU community, quote, "We are dreamers and possibility thinkers, but we do not believe in or advocate for toxic positivity. We will feel all the emotions, and my team and I have felt all of them since we got the news," end quote. In March of 2025, Lambert believed that no changes were needed to comply with the Trump administration's ban on DEI. In a PSU Vanguard story dated March 20, 2025, Lambert said, quote, "We aren't doing anything illegal. We do know that people are concerned, but I just want to confirm to our students that they're not by themselves and we have their backs," end quote. Brady Rowland, president of the Associated Students of Portland State University, said, quote, "From what Lambert sent out, you know it doesn't look awesome. It looks like there will be a lot of faculty layoffs," end quote. Rowland said that in her 2 years at PSU, she's heard students bring up administrative bloat at every board meeting with questions like, "Why are there so many administrators at the school? Why are you cutting faculty?" Rowland went on to say, quote, "They've always wanted to respond to that and do something, but to cut GDI was just not the right answer, in my opinion," end quote. This story is informed by reporting from Natalie Pate of Oregon Public Broadcasting and Nash Bennett of the PSU Vanguard.
Oregon hospitals can now be fined for not meeting minimum nurse-to-patient ratios, but nurses said some hospitals are not on board. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Oregon hospitals can now be fined for not meeting minimum nurse-to-patient ratios, but nurses say some hospitals are not following the spirit of the law. Fred Katz is a nurse at Rogue Regional Medical Center and a board member of the Oregon Nurses Association who backed the new law. He says at Rogue and other hospitals, administrators sometimes meet the new staffing standards for nurses by removing certified nursing assistants and other support staff from staffing plans. This means hospitals may end up with the required number of nurses on paper, but in reality, the care team has shrunk.
It just feels like the hospital wants to work around the law. They want to interpret it in a way that works for them and that potentially they avoid fines and then they can do what they want budget-wise.
This is the first time the state's staffing requirements have included fines for non-compliance, which can be up to $5,000 a day. Critics say the law, which sets nurse-to-patient ratios at 1-4 or higher for more acute care, will limit the number of patients that can be served. Katz says the new law is critical to make sure nurses can take breaks and eat during their 12-hour shifts without temporarily doubling the workload of a colleague. Along with making things harder for nurses, he says being short-staffed is dangerous for patients.
When we're understaffed, we're more harried, we're moving faster, there's more likelihood to make a mistake or to overlook something. And in addition, we're just not getting to our patients as quickly.
The law includes a margin of forgiveness, Katz adds, because it's not always possible to meet staffing ratios when, for example, people call out of work last minute. He adds since a number of hospitals around the state haven't submitted a new staffing plan that meets the guidelines, it is likely the Oregon Health Authority will start handing out fines this month. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Trump weighs in on the Texas redistricting effort as Democratic and Republican state across the country consider redrawing congressional maps, and North Carolina's governor vetoes an anti-DEI bill. With that story and more, it's Simone Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have an opportunity in Texas to pick up 5 seats. We have a really good governor, and we have good people in Texas. And I won Texas. I got the highest vote in the history of Texas, as you probably know. And we are entitled to 5 more seats.
Commenting publicly for the first time, President Donald Trump tells CNBC he supports the mid-decade Texas redistricting, which could set off an unprecedented string of similar moves by states blue and red. Joining California, Maryland Democrats say they may go after that state's lone Republican seat if Texas redraws its districts. And Vice President J.D. Vance will travel to Indiana, where the GOP could pick up one or both Democratic seats. New York state lawmakers are proposing an amendment to the state constitution, giving the legislature the power to redraw maps mid-decade if another state did so outside the ruling of a court order. Rachel Foss with Reinvent Albany says the amendment misses the mark.
If New York wants to have a better redistricting process, they could make a more independent process that puts voters first. I think the problem with this amendment is it would entrench politically motivated redistricting into our state constitution. If one state gerrymanders, it would say New York can do so as well.
New York lawmakers would need to pass the amendment during 2 different legislative sessions before going to voters, and courts in the state might decide to strike down maps drawn under the process. Work at the Texas legislature remains stalled, with the absence of more than 50 Democrats making it impossible to meet the quorum. Republican Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says he'll start removing the runaway lawmakers from office if they don't return by Friday, but it's unclear if Paxton has that authority, as courts have expressed reluctance on it in the past. Meanwhile, the conservative Fifth Circuit Federal Appeals Court struck a blow to Texas civil rights groups, ruling unanimously that the state could require a voter's state ID number or partial social security number to cast a mail-in ballot. It also recently ruled that mail-in ballots must be received by Election Day to be counted. In education news, the Republican-controlled General Assembly in North Carolina failed to override a veto by Democratic Governor Josh Stein of a ban on college diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. The state has the second most historically black colleges and universities in the country. Deborah Maxwell is with the NAACP in North Carolina.
the promise of having a sound basic education, which is part of the state constitution, is under threat. It doesn't mean a narrow right side education. It's to be diverse. It's to offer opinions so that you can be an informed citizen.
The General Assembly also failed to override vetoes of public school and local and state government DEI bans. Under unrelenting pressure to release files on the late pedophile and longtime Trump associate Jeffrey Epstein, the Justice Department says it's going ahead with a probe of former President Barack Obama and officials who investigated Russian election interference. And the chair of House Oversight is issuing subpoenas for former President Bill Clinton and others in connection with Epstein. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Youth Collective. At 6:30, Flashpoints. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. The weather forecast for this evening: expect cloudy conditions. Overnight low temperatures in the low 60s. Thursday's forecast calls for partly cloudy conditions with a high temperature in the mid-70s. Today in history: on August 6, 1945, the United States became the first and only nation to use atomic weapons in wartime when we dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, Japan. Approximately 80,000 people were killed, another 35,000 injured, and an additional 60,000 people would die from direct effects of radiation fallout. The quote of the day is from theoretical physicist and mathematician Albert Einstein. He said, quote, "If I had foreseen Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I would have torn up my formula in 1905.
I'm on my way. I'm on my way from you. I try.
Frontier Internet Services and Verizon Wireless agreed to spend $8 million to improve fiber optics and broadband access across Navajo and Apache counties, home to some of the state's biggest land-based tribes. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A pair of rural counties in eastern Arizona could soon start seeing significant investments in fiber and broadband networks. The funding is part of a multi-state settlement with two national telecommunications companies. KJZZ's Gabriel Piet-Tarazio has more on how it may help some tribal members get connected.
Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays announced that Frontier and Verizon have agreed to spend $8 million across Navajo and Apache counties, home to some of the state's biggest land-based tribes.
I'm never, ever going to stop bird-dogging this for these two counties because they deserve better. Just because you live in a rural county doesn't mean that these telecommunications companies can treat you differently.
For context, tribal lands make up two-thirds of Navajo County, while Apache County has about 70%, containing swaths of the Navajo, Hopi, Zuni, and White Mountain Apache reservations. Latest census data shows that more than half of all residents there are indigenous. The FCC reported in 2020 that almost a fifth of those living on tribal lands lacked access to broadband compared to 4% off-reservation. Part of this tentative settlement requires providers to find and fix the root causes of regular 911 outages on top of conducting a network-wide audit. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piet-Tarazio.
Food security, climate change, and increased tension with Russia is top of mind for residents in Alaska's Bering Strait region, and it was one of the topics at the recent Arctic Encounter Conference in Anchorage. Hundreds of people, including politicians, researchers, and indigenous knowledge holders, gathered for the event. Vera Kinnikok-Metcalf is the executive director of the Eskimo Walrus Commission. She lives in Nome and was born in Savunga, a small village on St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea. The community is located closer to Chukotka in eastern Russia than to the U.S., and Metcalf says residents have a lot in common with their neighbors.
Many of our families, relatives, kins originated in Chukotka. So we have this close connection, not just with marine mammals, but people to people.
Metcalf says climate change has real consequences for residents in her region who subsist on mammals migrating through the Bering Strait. A A warming Arctic affects those migrations. Unstable ice conditions also make whaling and walrus hunting more dangerous. The geopolitical climate has also been changing, according to panelists who spoke at a session which focused on conflict and cooperation in the region. Russia has been strengthening its relationship with China since invading Ukraine in 2022. As waters stay ice-free longer, that means shipping, fishing, and military activities on the Russian side have been growing as well, and contributing to tension between Russia and the U.S. Captain Steve White is the president of Marine Exchange of Alaska. He says the growth of Russian vessel traffic is noticeable.
We know that traffic is increasing through the Bering Straits. And you can just say, well, just numbers-wise, you know, it's more than doubled in, you know, the last 10 years. The season, the amount that, of time that vessels are transiting is also increasing.
White says it's important to look at how this increased activity is affecting locals. Historically, the Bering Strait region has been a place of collaboration, according to the Walrus Commission's Metcalf. Russian and American scientists and locals have worked together to protect their marine subsistence resources and exchange cultural knowledge. A lot of that work has come to a halt in recent years, but Metcalf and other speakers say they hope that collaboration returns. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report has found 510 credible incidents of human rights abuses in U.S. immigration detention centers since January 20th, 2025. The report, part of an ongoing investigation by the staff of Georgia Senator John Ossoff, accuses the Department of Homeland Security of obstructing congressional oversight of ICE. Average daily immigration arrests in June 2025 were up 268% compared with June of 2024, with the majority of people arrested having no criminal convictions. U.S. immigration detention facilities are estimated to be more than 13,500 people over capacity. The allegations of huge human rights abuses include 41 cases of physical and/or sexual abuse of detainees, 14 credible reports of pregnant women being abused, and 18 cases of children as young as 2 years old, including U.S. citizens, abused in DHS custody. Senator John Ossoff said, quote, "Regardless of our views on immigration policy, the American people do not support the abuse of detained and prisoners. It's more important than ever to shine a light on what's happening behind bars and barbed wire, especially and most shockingly to children," end quote.
The Trump administration is deploying National Guard troops to immigration detention facilities in 20 states with Republican governors, including Florida, Georgia, Virginia, Texas, and Louisiana. Personnel from the Marine Corps and Naval Reserve have been deployed to assist with case management, transportation and logistical support, and clerical support for the in and out processing of immigrants at ICE jails. Satara Gandahari, Advocacy Director of Detention Watch Network, said, quote, "ICE's partnership with the Department of Defense continues to deepen, making the agency a key collaborator in the massive expansion of the immigration detention system, which is already operating at a historic high. It's clear Trump and Stephen Miller are driven by a racist compulsion and will stop at nothing to proliferate hateful ideologies, intimidate government agencies, and disregard local elected leaders with the goal of villainizing all immigrants," end quote. The administration has already stationed troops along the southwest border and sent soldiers to quell protests against immigration raids in Los Angeles, a likely violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, which bars federal armed forces from participating in civilian law enforcement activities unless authorized by law.
The Dragon Bravo fire at the north rim of the Grand Canyon is rapidly expanding, having more than doubled in size since it ignited on July 4th from a lightning strike. As of this morning, the blaze has consumed over 130,000 acres with only 13% containment. The fire has grown by 30,000 acres since last Friday and has gained only 2% containment in that time. Intense dry heat and gusty winds have worsened conditions, making it difficult for fire crews to gain control. The fire's growth has also been accelerated by extreme dryness, creating brush drier than firewood. Mega fires like the Dragon Bravo are rare, accounting only for about 3% of fires in the U.S., but they cause the majority of land loss to wildfires each year. Over 1,100 personnel are battling the blaze with efforts focused on full suppression. The fire previously reached a peak containment level of 26% in mid-July after it tore through the north rim of the Grand Canyon, destroying the historic Grand Canyon Lodge and more than 70 other structures, but has since struggled to be contained due to its intense weather system, including the formation of fire clouds. As conditions worsen, there is concern that these fire clouds could lead to what are called fire cloud thunderstorms, complicating firefighting efforts even further. No rain in the forecast does not bode well for what should be monsoon season. When health workers provide care by telephone or internet, fewer people need to drive their cars to the doctor's office. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. With technology, you can now have an appointment with your doctor remotely. But Congress is debating whether Medicare will continue to cover the cost of those telehealth visits. So John Maffey, a physician and associate professor at UCLA, wants to make sure policymakers consider all the benefits telehealth can provide. He says it increases access to care, especially for frail, elderly, and lower-income patients who may have a harder time getting to an in-person visit.
Telehealth or audio-only phone calls have been a lifeline for some of these more vulnerable groups of patients.
And Maffey says there's another, less recognized benefit: reduce carbon emissions due to fewer car trips to the doctor. In a recent study, his team found that if patients in the U.S. keep using telemedicine at the same rates they did in 2023, it would be comparable to taking at least 60,000 gas cars off the road.
This is not only boosting access to care. Telehealth may be a means to at least modestly reduce the carbon footprint of U.S. healthcare delivery.
Maffey says climate change is a major health threat, so it's important for his industry to do what it can to reduce its climate impact. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A Finnish energy company developed an innovative and sustainable power storage solution through passive solar. Their sand battery stores surplus electricity as heat when renewable energy is abundant and releases it later during low production periods. Mandy Stapleford has more on the story.
Good news, good planet, good news.
It's time now for your good news for a good planet. Sandy Power. Harnessing renewable energy sources like wind and solar are great for the environment, but they're not always available, sometimes making dependence on them a challenge, especially in places with limited sunlight or intermittent winds. Finnish company Polar Night Energy has developed an innovative and sustainable power storage solution using sand. Their sand battery stores surplus electricity as heat when renewable energy is abundant and releases it later during low production periods. An underground steel silo is filled with hundreds of tons of low-grade sand or sand-like material, heating pipes, and a fan. Surplus energy from wind turbines and solar panels heat the sand on high-volume days, up to 500 degrees Celsius, turning the sand silo into a thermal battery. This energy can be stored for months and later used as hot water, steam, or hot air for heating buildings. The system can also capture and repurpose excess heat from industrial production and server rooms, and even convert the heat back into electricity. A prototype of Polar Night Energy's sand battery went into production in 2022, and it's heating homes, offices, and even a swimming pool in a small town in western Finland. The company intends to introduce this simple silo storage solution everywhere, bringing more stability and year-round reliability to renewable energy around the world. And this is Mandy from GoodNewsGoodPlanet.com.
Dan Raphael yearns for a day without change. For a change.
So much changing so fast. CO2, methane, etc. in the air are no longer dangerous to our health. Emissions are beautiful. Employment or other statistics that don't meet Trump's approval are rigged numbers and their sources must be fired. Judges can no longer assume that federal lawyers are giving them honest information. Trump's going to add a gold festoon ballroom to the White House paid for by private contributions, also known as bribes. His gift airplane from Qatar will cost a couple million from the defense budget. Not that anyone in the Pentagon notices anything with less than 7 zeros. The monopolies controlling most of our groceries know we gotta eat, so pay the price or go hungry. These days, unless you're wealthy, no matter your color or sexual gender status, you're invisible. Don't get in the way. Answer every question the masked man asks, but don't ask any of your own. Pay taxes, get takeout, plug in, and shut up. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dave Johnson, Hannah Francis, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Simone Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlie, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Cheryl Denise.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.